Hello everyone, welcome back to the 21 and Sensory podcast with me, Emily. On today's podcast, it is just me, and I thought I'd do a kind of year roundup slash Christmas special slash festive bonanza. So let's get stuck in. I thought it'd be nice to do a kind of end of year wrap-up-y kind of podcast in a kind of people might be ever so slightly interested in my life, but if you're not, also as a kind of I don't know, friendly voice to listen to, because I know this time of year can be a bit weird, a bit isolating, a little bit all over the place, and you know, between kind of Christmas and New Year, it's weird. And yeah, so if you want to stick this on and just have someone ramble at you, hopefully this will provide some nice companionship. I'm all about podcasts being, you know, a kind of sense of company. I think podcasts are really good for that. So I hope this feels that way. So it's very important to me in this yearly roundup to mention some of the amazing special guests that I had on each month. Without these amazing special guests, you wouldn't have anything to listen to other than me, which nobody wants that. So we kicked things off in January with Rosemary Richings, who is a writer, editor, author, and also a neurodiversity advocate. I remember that being a really interesting chat. It doesn't feel like it was like 12 months ago. We had a really interesting conversation about how Rosemary is serving on the board of trustees of Dyspraxic Me, which is a UK charity. And she's also a founding member of the Dyspraxic Alliance. Rosemary is originally from Toronto, Canada, but moved to Marrakesh, which is in Morocco. So that was interesting in itself. So yeah, had lovely Rosemary on. And then in February, I had two different podcasts go live. So I had another podcast episode with author Ali Mason. That was a really interesting chat. We spoke about Ali's book, which had, I think it was about to come out. Yeah, it was due to come out in March this year, which it did. And that was The Autistic Guide to Adventure, which Ella Willis, who I had on the podcast the year before, illustrated. So that's a Jessica Kingsley Publishers book. So I really recommend that. And little old Emily here might feature in it as well, talking about skateboarding and pennyboarding. So definitely recommend the book. Yeah, it was really lovely to chat to Ali. We talked about the background Ali had, kind of in terms of university and growing up, and how Ali's always been someone that's keen to read and write from a young age. So yeah, it was really interesting to talk to Ali about how on earth you start to write a book and marketing a book and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that was a really interesting chat. So also in February, I had the super lovely Ashley. So you might know Ashley from her fab TikTok videos, where she has over 35,000 followers at the time of recording. And she also has a blog where she talks about her experiences. So that was episode 68, if anyone wants to go back and listen to that. But it was really interesting to chat to her about her late diagnosis as autistic, and also living with her boyfriend who's also autistic. So it was interesting to talk about the kind of dynamics and things. So yeah, really recommend going back and having a listen to that one. In March, I had special guest Sophie Broadgate on for episode number 70. That's right, 70, madness. And Sophie is an autistic writer, director, and filmmaker based kind of between Cumbria and Manchester. And we had a really interesting conversation about how Sophie's kind of transitioned to working more as a kind of writer and director, and focusing more on like personal subjects. So Sophie was currently developing like a slate of short films that we had a little chat about, and you can also watch some of Sophie's short films. I really enjoyed Sophie's short The Water Tower. I really recommend going to watch that. So that was episode number 70. In April, I had the very lovely Marianne Eloise, who is a writer, journalist, and author, and she lives in Brighton in the UK. And she writes about all different things like TV, wellness, disability, film, business, digital culture, sex, alt music, for places such as The Cut, The New York Times, Dazed, Vulture, ID, and The Guardian, to name a few. But we had a really interesting chat about her essay collection, which is titled Obsessive Intrusive Magical Thinking, which is out everywhere and more recently in paperback too. And I had read the book before I spoke to Marianne, and it was really interesting to kind of quiz Marianne on all the different kind of bits of her essay, and of course asking Marianne about Bowie, which is her dog. He's very cute. In May, it was just little old me doing a catch up, so do you know what? I'm not going to go into that. You can go back and listen to my life in May if you want to. I think that was episode 72. Let's double check. Yes. And then I had a really interesting chat with a special guest called Jordan. So Jordan Ellis, and he is a neurodivergent design lead. It was really interesting talking to Jordan about his design work and how he's currently working in fintech, which is financial technology, and just how he's working towards a kind of better life as a neurodivergent person in the creative industry. Yeah, it was kind of interesting to hear more about Jordan's background and kind of inspiration. And it was a really interesting conversation, especially for me as a designer and illustrator. It was nice to have someone to talk to about, like, the craft of design, if that makes sense. So that was episode 73. And then on episode 74, I was very lucky to be able to speak to special guest Ella Maisie Purvis. And Ella is a classically trained ballet dancer who went on to retrain as an actor at Lambda. And you might know Ella from her role in A Kind of Spark for BBC, which is coming back for another series, so series two, so that's really exciting. And yeah, we talked about the other things that Ella had been in. So they've been in Heartstopper on Netflix and Malpractice for ITV. And we spoke about how Ella had essentially got to where they are today and how they made the switch from ballet to acting and how that came about, and also the kind of late diagnosis of autism. So yeah, it was a really interesting chat that you should definitely go back and listen to. And also, it's well worth listening to because I remember Ella saying that they were very much available for all things Mission Impossible related in terms of acting, so you'll have to go back and listen for that last sentence I said to make sense. In August, I had a special guest who was my friend Alice, and Alice is currently studying speech and language therapy at university as a master's, and Alice is 25 and was recently diagnosed as autistic. So that was a really interesting chat, and we mentioned about kind of growing up together and both not knowing we were autistic and now knowing each other as autistic. So that was a really interesting conversation too. So that was episode 75. Episode 76 was a September catch up with me. So again, I won't go into that. You can go back and have a listen. And then episode 77 was special guest Georgia Holliday, who you might know as a lovely writer, poet and content creator online. And Georgia is an ADHD and autistic writer, poet, and describes themselves as a lifelong student of words. Her work explores feminism, neurodivergence, chronic illness, and just the general messiness of life. So we had a really interesting chat, and again, Georgia's a dog mum, so had to ask her a little bit about her dog. So yes, if you're a dog person like me, you're gonna love some of these podcasts because I really go in depth. I'm like, so you have a dog, tell me more. And then my latest podcast, which was in November, I had the lovely Korn on, and you have probably heard of Korn if you're within the kind of autism community on Instagram and TikTok. Korn is a queer autistic Korean American illustrator and designer, and you might know Korn through @candy.korn on TikTok and Instagram, with their wonderful series of videos all about like navigating life as an autistic Asian ace, and video topics about like special interests and particularly home interior design, like, and all things art and design, like Korn has lots of different really cool collections that they've just been collecting throughout life, so you have to go check out Korn's videos. And then that brings us to today's podcast, which is the roundup of the year, and it's been a busy one, as you can tell. I feel so privileged to have been able to speak to everyone, for people giving up their time and just being so lovely, and just kind of trusting me immediately, you know, with some quite kind of deep topics, and being so keen to talk about late diagnosis and things that have happened that they, you know, might even still be processing in their lives. So yeah, it's been really interesting, and I can't wait to speak to more people in 2024. Another thing that I wanted to chat about was Spotify Wrapped. Now, you know what I'm talking about if you're on social media, because every year Spotify Wrapped comes around. I think it's usually like November time, and it's just, essentially, it's just fancy listening stats from your Spotify account. And a lot of people argue that it's not very accurate, but anyway, that's a whole episode in itself. If you're a podcaster that uses Spotify for podcasters, which I do, it's how I get my podcast onto all the different platforms, they give you a Spotify Wrapped of your own. So I thought I'd go through my 2023 Wrapped stats for the 21 and Century podcast. So let's have a look. I'm on the Spotify Wrapped page right now. It's very whizzy with like animations. So apparently 80% of the listeners of this podcast discovered the podcast this year, which is exciting. So hello, any new people, it's lovely to have you here. And then there's like global stats, which apparently I was streamed in 49 countries. I say I was streamed, the podcast was streamed in 49 countries, and the UK was the top country with 45% of your total streams. Huh. Okay, hello all the UK people. That's really interesting. Okay. So I have the most new listeners. Number one, apparently in the UK. Number two, in the United States. Number three, Spain. Number four, Singapore. And number five, Canada. So hi everyone from all these different places. It's very, very nice that you've tuned in. You might be able to hear my laptop taking off in the background. It's literally because I'm recording audio on it and I've got this website up, so it just can't cope. Let's see if there's any more stats. Like, it tells me the top like genres of like pop and rap and what listeners have listened to. So that's cool. Bit weird. Apparently my podcast was shared mostly via direct link, which was 58%, 26% on Instagram, 6% on WhatsApp, and 5% by text, and then another 5% other. And my podcast was rated 5 stars, which is really cool. That's really nice to hear. Also, if you'd like to also rate my podcast, if you go on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can like rate using the star system. So the big kind of stats were, in terms of listeners, my podcast grew by 8%. By streams, it grew by 66%. And by followers, it grew by 42%. So thank you very much for subscribing and streaming. And apparently, I was a top 10 podcast for 345 fans. So for 345 people out there, I was in their top 10 podcasts of the year, which is insane, because it's just me making this little old podcast. And oh, apparently I'm a top 5 podcast for 223 fans. That's so mad. That's so exciting. Ooh, I'm the number one podcast for 49 fans. That's nuts. So almost 50 people, I was their number one podcast out of all the podcasts in the world. That is mad. Oh, thank you so much, everybody. It's really interesting to see this. kind of stats. I know they're only numbers and numbers don't matter and followers don't matter, but it's lovely to see a bit of engagement and it kind of going up. So thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It really does mean a lot to me. About a week or so ago, I asked on Instagram if anyone wanted to ask me any questions that I would answer in this episode. So here's a little informal Q&A bit of this podcast. So someone asked me, have I got any more Lego sets? So this was after, I think, was it last year or the year before, I was given a Lego succulent cactus set as a Christmas present, which was amazing. And then I also got like these kind of third party like LED lights that means that like each of the little succulents is backlit. Anyway, very cool. Go on the Lego website and check out that. I'll link it in the show notes for anyone that's interested. So yeah, I was given it as a present at Christmas, but I haven't, have I got any more Lego? No, I don't think I have. And I've seen that they're releasing more kind of planty, like little succulents. So maybe I will get one of those at some point. This is the thing, like Lego's so expensive, right? But it's also really satisfying to build. So like I would never have bought myself the succulent Lego set. So yeah, we'll see. Maybe I'll treat myself at some point. I don't know. Okay, next question. Favourite fidget toy this year? That's a really good question. I think I tend to always have a Tangle in my bag or my pocket, like coat pocket. Trying to think of anything else that I've like gravitated towards a lot. I have like a little poppet on a kind of necklace string. It's just like one big poppet. And that's quite good because I can just either throw it around my neck or just kind of pop it in my lap. I'm really trying to think. I'm still really into kind of the sequin, like back and forth texture. So I have a sequin pillow and a sequin notebook. But yeah, I think my favourite fidget toy this year has got to be Tangle. And if you haven't already seen, they actually gifted me, like sent me, a like I'm gonna call it a Halloween style bucket of Tangles, and Tangle have never sent me anything before, and I've never been so excited in my life. It was literally Christmas but in October. So go on my Instagram or TikTok and go and have a look at that. They just gifted them to me. There wasn't any kind of obligation to post about them, but I couldn't not, because oh my god, they gave me like one of every Tangle, and I've now spread them around friends and family and stuff. I'm like, everyone have a Tangle, because you can have too many Tangles. Go and have a look at the video. I'll link it in the show notes and you can see how many Tangles sent me. It was insane. So I've just been giving them to anyone who I think will benefit from a Tangle. Right, next question is, how can those of us who love someone with SPD support them through the holidays? So if anyone doesn't know, SPD stands for sensory processing disorder, and it was actually what I was assessed slash diagnosed as having when I was 8, as I didn't realise I was autistic until I was 25. So that's why someone's kind of asked about SPD, I think, just because I kind of knew more about that than I did autism. So yeah, how can those of us who love someone with SPD support them through the holidays? I think people overthink this, but actually it's just, I think the most beneficial thing is giving someone with sensory processing issues time and space. So give them that little bit of extra time to process the situation that they need to go in or about to go into or need to leave. Maybe try and tell the person what to expect from each day over the holidays. I find that really helpful, knowing the structure of a day and what to expect. And yeah, the space, I mean just kind of the space to escape and, you know, not be judged for needing that space. Yeah, and I think just no judgment and just the trust that, you know, people need their own kind of time to process things. So if someone isn't able to communicate, it might just be that they need that quiet time to process things, sensory wise, because there's a hell of a lot of sensory input around the kind of festive season. So yeah, I hope that's helpful. Do you have any coping methods for Christmas, and what are your New Year's resolutions? Do I have any coping methods for Christmas? Escaping to toilets. do you know what? Actually, that's not a Christmas coping mechanism. That's a year-round coping mechanism, and it's a very good one. Yeah, I just have regular timeouts, so I recommend that. Also, like, if you're going to, like, a relative's, maybe saying, like, is there a bedroom I can escape to? Like, or, you know, a bedroom that's not being used that I could go and sit in, kind of thing. Like, I've had relatives do that before, where they're like, this is the most quietest room, like, if you need it, kind of thing. Or if, like, my brother needs it. So, yeah, I think that's quite helpful. Like, create a designated safe space for people. A, like, safe, quiet space where people can retreat to. Yeah, any other coping methods for Christmas? I don't know. I think just making sure that you have, like, actual downtime in between, you know, kind of the commitments of seeing family and friends, like, almost like nothing days, which I don't mean, like, doing nothing. It's kind of hard. So I mean, like, days to yourself where you can do what you want to, or do something that, you know, kind of makes you feel like you're not, you know, overly busy and overwhelmed. So, for example, for me, a kind of nothing day would be, I don't know, I enjoy, like, organising stuff, so, like, reorganising, I don't know, my stationery or something, or, like, sorting out, like, my stickers or something, or just drawing for a little bit, and then, I don't know, watching YouTube, or, like, downtime where you feel like you're doing, you know, bits and pieces is quite nice, because I feel like it can be quite hard to do nothing. so maybe something like that. Okay, what are my New Year's resolutions? I don't really know. I'm not very good at, like, thinking ahead or picturing the future. So I find New Year's resolutions a bit hard. But I want to find a form of exercise that I, like, really love, because I have found that in the past, but I've had, like, some back issues, so I kind of need to find an exercise that doesn't, like, cause back stuff. and I kind of tried, like, HIIT workouts, which is, like, high intensity workouts, and yoga earlier in the year, but I kind of still got a bit of a bad back, so I was like, So I need to try and find a balance of exercise, basically, that I can do, that I feel good from, but that doesn't start my back off again. And then, what else? I want to, like, eat better, which sounds weird, like, not in a kind of, like diet way, but I mean, like, I'm a vegetarian, and I don't really like any of the, like, substitute, like, meats that people have for protein. Like, the close I've gotten is to, like, having corn, like, once in a while. I don't know if corn is, like, a worldwide thing, but it's spelled Q-U-O-R-N, rather than, like, corn on the cob, corn. And it's just kind of like a meat substitute sort of thing. Yeah, but I only have that every once in a while, and I keep kind of thinking that actually I don't really have a very balanced diet, because I don't really get any protein, because I'm not eating meat. And I've never eaten fish, so yeah, I would like to get a better balance of you say like a balanced diet. It sounds like I'm on, like, not on a diet, a balanced way of eating. So yeah, I'm going to try and work on that. I love my fruit and veg. It's just, I feel like I'm not getting the kind of protein and, you know, kind of good stuff from the other side, which I guess people who have meat or like meat substitutes would. So yeah, those are my New Year's resolutions, I guess. What's my favourite podcast that I recorded this year? Do you know what? I've just said I'm terrible at looking at the future. I'm also terrible at looking at the past. I'm going to have a look at who I've recorded with this year. Thing is, it's really hard to choose a favourite. What was the question? What's my favourite podcast I recorded this year? Thing is, I've really enjoyed talking to everyone. And I'm not sure I could pick a favourite. It's really difficult because I've had really interesting authors and writers and filmmakers and journalists and designers and actors and my friend Alice and content creators and TikTokers and illustrators, and I can't choose. What is your favourite fashion subculture? I feel like I'd need to kind of look that up. I feel like my favourite kind of like niche fashion kind of style would be like, I don't know if people have seen it on Pinterest, like kind of like, I think it's called normcore, where it's like, hang on, let me Google it and see if it comes up with anything. Yeah, it's just kind of says here, characterized by unpretentious average looking clothing. That's literally me in a nutshell. Yeah, it's just very average jeans, t-shirt style. So and I have a Pinterest board full of normcore kind of style, so maybe that would be my favorite. And the last question beautifully gets me onto the rest of this podcast, which is someone asked, how's 2023 been for you? So let's get into that a little bit. I realized that I've spoken for almost 15 minutes on the Q&A bit, which was meant to be quick. But yeah, let's dive into how 2023 was. Okay, so I last did a kind of catch-up podcast episode where it was just me in September, and I am recording this on Saturday, 23rd of December. So I finished work yesterday, Friday 22nd, and I am now sat back at my parents' in my old bedroom. Is it my old bedroom or is it still my bedroom, you know, if you've moved out? But yes, I'm sat in the bedroom that I used to live in. And this very microphone in front of me is sat on a chair, and my laptop is currently sat on a cardboard box. So we're making our own, you know, arrangements. So yeah, I'm sat on the floor recording this. So now you have a picture of my setup. Which isn't usually like this, but yeah, it's been an it's been a year, you know. I think I said in September that I was kind of on the struggle bus, and by that I mean I feel like I've just been struggling a lot and I'm on a bus and I can't get off. So if you hear me say struggle bus, that's what I mean. Yeah, I just feel like a lot has happened since September. I was evicted from the flat that I was living in because the landlord wanted to move back in. So I had to move at the start of December, which was not ideal because you're given 2 months' notice for the eviction like type that I had, and I wasn't expecting it at all. It came out of the blue, just one Wednesday, and it was done via property agents via email, just to say like your landlord is evicting you, and the landlord didn't even get in touch, so there was actually no personable conversation. It was just, you're being evicted, deal with it. So I feel like landlords don't appreciate the fact that their homes become your home. Basically, anyone else who's renting will understand that. So yeah, had to move, but have moved to a nicer place. But transition, change, being autistic, not a great mix, as I'm sure a lot of you are probably aware. And if you've ever had to move or have moved this year, I feel your pain. So yeah, I feel like that was a lot in terms of not knowing that I was going to move towards the end of the year and then having to kind of do it. But I guess maybe if I had more time and had thought about it, then that would have been harder to know it was coming. I don't know if it was good that I didn't know it was coming or bad that I didn't know it was coming, but it came and went and I'm settled and reset up and stuff. So yeah, it is okay now. But yeah, I think it's just been a bit weird. And also, I think in my last, in the September catch up, I explained that I was struggling a lot with dissociation, which I have been just this whole year, this year particularly. But yeah, go back and have a listen to that episode if you haven't already. But I will give you a brief overview of what dissociation is, what it means to me, and when it started. So I began to struggle with dissociation last October, and it's kind of a sense of detachment from yourself. So there's kind of depersonalization, which is you don't feel real and you don't feel attached to your own body, and you can feel detached from like your own kind of limbs when you're looking down, and just feel like you're kind of just really not real and kind of floating through life. And then there's derealization, which is basically about not feeling real kind of in an environment. So you kind of, so an example is if I go outside, like everything around me doesn't feel real. It feels like I'm kind of in some sort of, I don't know, not film, but like in a kind of oddly separate, like I don't feel connected to where I'm walking or what I'm doing out in the world. So yeah, there's the kind of more self and the more environment side of dissociation, and I experience both. Some people experience one or the other or both. Yeah, it's very interesting to read about, but terrifying at the same time, not feeling real. So yeah, I've just been struggling with that, and it really ramped up October onwards, and then a lot in January, and kind of since January it's been every day, whereas it first started with like really short flashes. So that's kind of overview. There's no real update on it in terms of it getting better. I guess I'm more used to it, because apparently if like when you feel dissociated, you kind of put yourself into a cycle of worrying about the dissociation, which makes the dissociation worse, which is terrible. Like you make your own, I guess it's almost a kind of anxiety, but the fact that you're worrying and the feeling of not feeling real is so distressing that you put yourself in a cycle of worse dissociation is really horrible. But it was very interesting to read that, because I kind of look at it a little bit differently. And also, I have a lovely friend who I speak to a lot via voice notes. And she actually struggles with dissociation, and we've both been like, it's so nice to chat to someone who understands it and who's like not suffered from it but has struggled with it. And we're both like, it's really bad that we're so, like, you know, excited to be able to chat to each other about this. But it is really nice because you feel a little bit mad when you're like, I don't feel real, because it's not like a general feeling that people have experienced, like necessarily, like in terms of like mental health conditions and things. I feel like obviously people could understand, in terms of anxiety and maybe dissociating due to like trauma and things, but for longer periods of time it's really hard to explain how that feels. Finding a sense of community in someone else has been really helpful, and just being like, I had a really bad day of dissociation, and the other person getting it, is it just feels kind of validating in that you're not alone. And it's not normal, although apparently a lot of people do struggle with dissociation, and it is quite a big, it's a kind of big struggle that a lot of people have, but it's very under kind of documented and not massively known about in terms of going to GPs and the NHS and stuff like that. So that's still going on. I think I'd also updated about kind of work stuff. I was starting a new job in September. So basically, I started a new job and then also got evicted, which kind of happened very close to each other, which isn't great for... I mean, the starting a new job is obviously a good thing. It means I can pay the rent on the place that I've moved to. But yeah, the job is going good. People are really lovely. It's a small team. I do need to work out, like, working from home and stuff, but other than that, it's all good, and the people are really nice, and yeah, I'm glad that I have found the right job, and that I waited so long to find it. So a bit of backstory is that in January, I was made redundant from the company that I was working at, and so in February I just did like freelance design work, like onwards, and then in September that's when I found a kind of job that I knew would kind of suit me. I'd had one other job offer like during the middle of the year, and I'd also had loads of interviews, and if you listen to my September podcast, which I keep saying, you'll hear all about the horrible interview processes I went through. But yeah, it's good. That has been a good thing this year. I'm putting it out there. The job is good. So, what else was I going to talk about? I wanted to talk about some books that I have read in 2023. My book target, so I use Goodreads in order to track my reading. So, I set my Goodreads 2023 challenge to 25 books. And I have read 27, which I think is probably the most that I've read in a year. Obviously it helps being made redundant in order for my book reading habits to probably go up a bit. But yeah, it's been a good year for reading, and I'm currently reading book 28. So hopefully if I finish that before the end of the year, that'll count. So let's call it 28. So yeah, let's have a look at my year in books, because Goodreads gives you like stats. So apparently I have read 8,338 pages. The shortest book I read was 54 pages, and the longest book I read was 544 pages. Interesting, it was 54 and 544. The average book length was 308 pages. So that's interesting. And the highest rated on Goodreads, the book that I read that is the highest rated on Goodreads, was Strong Female Character by Fern Brady. And I am going to go through the other books that I read. Let's start with Fern's book, seeing as I've said it. Really interesting book, and so interesting that I also got my mum to read it. So if you don't know Fern Brady, she is a comedian and she's been on kind of different TV shows and has a tour called Autistic Bikini Queen, and also was on like the UK Taskmaster TV program, but is a very successful comedian and has written a book about her life, and it was fascinating and talks a lot about kind of the background of her life and kind of journey to an autism diagnosis and a very late diagnosis in life. But yeah, I really recommend it, and it's really interesting to see the kind of like the coming to terms of the diagnosis and realizing how she was struggling and in a way sort of acting out because she didn't realize that she was autistic. So yeah, really interesting book. So I also read the last book in I think it was a trilogy of books. Yeah, so it's called All the Pieces of Me by Libby Scott and Rebecca Westcott, and it's part of the like Can You See Me series about a girl called Tally, which is really interesting. And basically they've co-written this book together about a girl called Tally and her struggle with coming to realise that she's autistic, and it's a fictional book, but it's really interesting to see like her kind of growth throughout the three different books, and this is the last book called The Pieces of Me, and I honestly really recommend it. I really enjoyed it, and I'm 29 years old, but I would say that it's probably aimed at like secondary school age. So for example, in the last book she's in year 9 and like prepping for GCSEs. But yeah, I just find the character of Tally really relatable, and having also been in secondary school in the UK, I was like, oh my god, this and this and this. And I think again, I also was like saying to my mum she should read this book because I just related so much to all of the things that Tally went through in secondary school and just the horrible sensory overwhelm. So recommend that. And then what else? I read a really good book on dissociation, which is called I Don't Feel Real: A Brief Guide to Depersonalization and Derealization Disorder, and it is by a person called Carolyn Spring. It's a really interesting book that covers the kind of what depersonalization, derealization is, what causes it, the sort of treatment options, and existing research alongside some case studies, which are at the end of the book. And I'm going to say it again, I got my mum to read this book, so I was like, oh my god, this is my life, this is my experience. It's a really short book, and it was on, so it's 63 pages, and it's on Amazon, so I got it on my Kindle. I need to talk about my Kindle in a minute. Yeah, and it was, I think I got it, like, discounted, because they do, like, Kindle book deals regularly, so worth looking out for that, because it is quite a short book. And this Caroline person has written a lot around kind of trauma and stress response and stuff. But yeah, it's just a really interesting book. It's a very brief guide, like she says, and I think it's well worth reading if you or someone else you know struggles with any kind of dissociation stuff. Yeah, it gives a really good background, and the case studies are really interesting because you hear from real people who have come to dissociation. Everyone's kind of come to it via the internet sort of thing and been like, oh, I have this thing, or you know, have discovered it about themselves, and of all different ages, all different backgrounds, and also like all different kind of like causes. So there's lots of different ways that dissociation can come about, which it mentions in the book. So yeah, a really good like all-round read in terms of if you're interested in it or if you care for someone who struggles with it. And then what else have I read? So I read Catherine May's Enchantment, Awakening Wonder in an Anxious Age. If her name sounds familiar, it's because I have also read another book from her, and you might have as well. She's also the author of Wintering and The Electricity of Every Living Thing, which are both really great books. I've got to say, I think this one was probably my least favourite of the three. I think I would say The Electricity of Every Living Thing is my favourite, then Wintering, and then Enchantment. I just felt like, in terms of the flow of the books and the kind of how I related to them, I feel like that's how I would order them. But I'm glad I read it, because I really enjoy her kind of free-flowing style of writing. It's like quite expressive, but yeah, I really recommend her books. I just think that the other two that she's written are really good in comparison to this one, which is kind of just good. I hope that makes sense. So yeah, I do recommend that. And again, Catherine May is a late diagnosed autistic. Can you see the theme of these books, everybody? And then another book I read was Holly Smale's newish book. When did it come out? So let's have a look. She says Googling. Okay, so it was published in May. I read it towards, when did I read it? Towards the end of the year, was it? And yeah, I had read Holly Smale's Geek Girl series, and I've also had Holly on the podcast, so I will link that episode in the show notes where she came on for an episode, which was lovely. So yeah, The Cassandra Complex was published in May this year, and I read that. I actually borrowed it from my local library. Always feel like I'm winning at life when I can find a book in my local library that's on my like to be read or like wish list. So I was really happy that they had a copy of it. And also I got a copy of Strong Female Character by Fern Brady from the same library, and I was like, oh my god, this library has such great books on autism. But yeah, it was really interesting, like, backstory. Again, it's fiction, and again, it's about an autistic person and kind of her workplace and her love life, and yeah, it's very, it's interesting, and it goes quite kind of in depth into her thinking and her routines and her structure, so you feel like you're kind of learning more and more about her, like, way of being, basically, in this world, and being able to cope in this world. So yeah, another book that was good. Trying to have a look back on my Goodreads just to see if there was any other good autism related books. I don't know if anyone else finds this, but Goodreads is really slow to load for me. Does anybody else struggle with this? Red. Just takes ages to load. Also read a lot of other random books. I've really gotten into like reading about other like careers, so I think in the September podcast, I'm mentioning again, I said that I'd read about like an anaesthetist's and a doctor's perspective on life and stuff, but so since then I've been reading about prison doctors, I've been reading about doctors at Heathrow Airport, I've been reading more about like prison officers, and also like what do you call them, like customs officers at airports and things. I'm just really interested in lots of finding out lots about different like careers, and I kind of have an interest in like kind of policing and crime, so I guess kind of that sort of links in a bit. So yeah, I have just been doing lots of kind of random reading in between like fiction stuff, but I think I lean towards more non-fiction books than fiction. I like to hear about people's lives and people's stories And that's probably why I have my own podcast and how I'm able to talk for 40 minutes is I really enjoy listening to people and not only like learning from them in a cheesy way, but I'm just really fascinated by how people operate in this world, how people exist and have carved their own little niches and careers and pathways and interests and things. So yeah, I'm definitely more of a non-fiction person. Also, for I think it was my birthday. Was it my birthday? I think so. My mum got me a Kindle Paperwhite, and I was kind of in on this idea because I had one of the like really old Kindles from Amazon that had the like QWERTY keyboard. So the keyboard, like physical buttons on the Kindle. Very old model, probably like the most original model. So I was like, I would really like a Kindle that's backlit so that I can read it in bed. Because I was having to like use a, this is a first world problem, but use like one of those clip-on lights. So I saw a Kindle Paperwhite that was unopened on Vinted, and I was like, oh my god. And my mum was like, what were you looking at? And I explained, and she was like, I'll get it for you for your birthday. Oh my god, it's been a game changer. I love it. And I love the like matte feel of it, because obviously now Kindles are touch screens, whereas before it was just like buttons to click to the next pages and things. So that's kind of wild to get used to, is the like swiping. But I really like the matte effect of the screen, and I love how small and portable it is. And I just, like, if I ever have to go on a train or I'm in a waiting room, like at the doctor's or something like that, I just take it like wherever I go kind of thing, and I just love it. And also Amazon do daily Kindle deals, which I don't know if people are aware of, but they do like daily and kind of, I guess, weekly deals, and you can get a book for like 99p, or there's like a pound book deals as well, which is practically, you know, 99p a pound. But yeah, that's a really good way of reading books for a bit less. What else was I going to say? Oh yeah, so I have on my like Amazon account, I have a wish list just for Kindle books. And what I do is, if I'm ever on my Kindle reading, like when I get to the end of a chapter or I want to stop reading, I'll go into the Kindle store, and if you go to view your wish list, you can see if like any of your books that you want to read at some point are on offer. So that's been a good way of like, I'll just check in every like maybe a few days just to see if any of them have like gone down. And that's how I've gotten like the books I really want to read for like less money. So yeah, it's worth making, like, make your own separate Kindle book wish list on Amazon, which is separate from like, I don't know, a shopping wish list, and just put all the books that you want to read on there and just keep checking in, because they do go down. Yeah, top tip from me on Kindle stuff. I think I might wrap the podcast up here. I hope everyone has a lovely festive season and a very happy new year. I am mega looking forward to speaking to more of you lovely people in the new year, and also getting some more special guests on my podcast. I love hearing people's stories, as I've said earlier in this episode. So yeah, I'm excited to get back to interviewing and chatting to people from all walks of life. See you soon!